we now move to our next speaker, Hugh Young. Hugh is prolific. And a broadcaster, a lexicographer. Now, he has a website. Well, he has many websites, but one for Māori pronunciation. Here it is here. And I visited it because I used to live in Kahanui. But now, I live in Pauatahanui. If you want to learn how to say such words correctly, go and visit Hugh's, one of Hugh's dictionary of Māori pronunciations of place names. Hugh is going to talk about a challenging topic, a thumb cheek clenching topic for some of us, perhaps.
Lead crossing,
yes. And when I talked to him about this, he said, "I have heard all the circumcision jokes, and I have a response for all of them." And I said, "Well, it's no skin off my nose." So they've all been cut. So with a topic which I'm sure we're absolutely waiting with bated breath to hear, please welcome Mr. Hugh Young.
Now, I warn you, this isn't pretty much Mereholt's bard. And for a lot of you, I'm very, very sorry. Lake of the Cock. 100 million years ago, when sex was being invented, the mammals, looking for a way to keep themselves contented, evolved more copious penile skin, till every male was wearing a gliding sheath, a loose prepuce, a kind of rolling bearing. It kept their glanses, moist and warm and sensitive and soft, and made their sex so easy if they could have, they'd have laughed. But best of all, that folded tube was full of nerves for pleasure and shot them into ecstasies that none of them could measure. And all was well for eons till the human head grew large, and some were slaves beside the Nile, and others were in charge. Perhaps some jealous pharaoh who'd been born with not much tassel said, "Cut them off." They cut, because that was safer than to hassle, and kept on cutting even when that king was pyramided. The custom spread, though they had long forgotten why they did it. And still throughout the Middle East, though no one understands it, they say, but now with tongue in cheek, their jealous god demands it. And strange to tell, this craze befell the English-speaking nations, while Europe and the Eastern world disdained modifications. And even Jews, a few, refused to keep up the tradition. No god demanding cuts to putzes merits that position. The total in the whole world's maybe 30-odd percent, and some are cut in surgeries, and some cut in a tent, and some are cut for ritual, and some are cut for shame. But when you cut the bullshit, domination is the game. Of course, no one would cut a child professing naked power. Instead, 300 different silly reasons on a shower, excuses to reduce the male sex's pride and joy, as cut ones take what they have lost and never ask the boy to make him look the same as me or different from the others, to make it bigger, make it smaller, make him like his brothers, to make him sexy, make him chaste, or tell the twins apart. And when you shoot down, a dozen others start. To save him from diseases, from the scourge of leprosy, from STI, STD and UTI and also HIV, from prostatitis, hernia and hydrocephaly, from rupture and, of course, from homosexuality. And cutting them as babies makes sure none of them remember the pleasure without measure given by an intact member. Though men who have lost their prepuces in adulthood would find that having sex without one was like going colourblind. Well, now the custom's faded out in England and Australia. And Kiwis and Canucks say prostatectomy is a failure. But still, one country where the foreskin's very seldom dangled is the homeland of the brave and free, whose banner is star-spangled. For in the States at market rates, the scalpel's still a flashing. A boy is born, his foreskin shorn, the doctor rakes the cash in, and meanwhile, by the back door, There's a lab assistant waiting to take the skin and grow it, hefty fees anticipating. And never mind that one boy's blind and others end up dead, and many lose their frenulum and some will lose their head, and all of them are scarred for life, and all lose some sensation.
We've made them men.
We've made them clean. Discourage masturbation. And always it's presented as the parents' free decision. But let a mum's or dad's opinion come into collision with matrons, docs or in-laws, then they'll find they have no voice, as a none too subtle pressure makes a travesty of choice. They'll mock him in the locker room, the hapless parents here. In fact, these days it's boys who are cut who'll have to face that fear. It must look like his father, says his granddad, old and wise. Yet when Junior peeks at daddy's, what he'll notice is its size. And strange to tell, as through the boys the scalpel slice and whirl, these self-same people know that to incise a little girl is horrible and cruel and a breach of human dignity, and anyone who cuts them must be driven by malignity. From halfway round the world of little girls they hear the screams and rush to pluck out distant motes, ignoring their own beams. While near at hand there grows a growl, a rising tide of anger from men who've found out what they've lost and want back all their whanger. All is not lost. At some small cost, and trouble worth a mention, you can produce a new prepuce by gentle constant tension, which lacks the nerves but still deserves careful consideration. A gentler way than surgery, more use than litigation. The doctors fear the lawsuits, just a few would make them poor. They fear the judgment summonses and bailiffs at the door. Those gentlemen who ask them so politely, may I trouble you, I've come to seize your golf clubs and your yacht and BMW. So they attack, distract, fight back with arguments ad hominem. They'll break into our surgeries and then they'll put a bomb in them. Don't listen, they're extremists on a flap of skin fixating. We know what's best, but you'll have guessed it's Ritz they're contemplating. So here's an operation done as often as one blinks, that had its strange beginnings in the shadow of the Sphinx, and carries on for reasons neither sound, humane, nor valid. That story's told. I'll now unfold the moral of this ballad. To snip a cock's a load of crock, no matter how they cut it. These words beware, just sign down there. They'll try to scare you, but it would do your son a wondrous boon to treat them with derision. You'd dock his dick? My God, that's sick. To hell with circumcision.
Okay, that's the brief history. I said it was epic. Okay, now a bit of... We didn't say, did we? This is not PowerPoint. This is open office. Because in June, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave $50 million to Africa for circumcising Africans. $50 million. And now, in the Zambian police force, it is mandatory for all new recruits to be circumcised to protect them from HIV. So, any discussion of circumcision should start with the part removed. In the US, circumcision is so normalised that anatomy textbooks do not show the foreskin, and it is defined as the part that is removed by circumcision. The rigid band described by John Taylor et al. In 1996. In 1996 they discovered this, is particularly rich in myosinous corpuscles, which are highly sensitive to light touch and stretching. And if they don't have an erogenous function, what was evolution thinking about? It's not just a flap of skin, as commonly said. It's considerable size, about 100 square centimetres. Sorry, I should be reading my script, shouldn't I? The foreskin is much larger than people imagine, especially when you consider both sides. It has a number of blood vessels which circumcision can sever. The rolling action is unique and brings the ridged band out where it can make best contact with the vagina, hand, or whatever. Masters and Johnson in the 1970s failed to measure the sensitivity of the foreskin when they came to the conclusion that circumcision has no effect on sexual functioning, a very widely quoted claim. Payne et al. Did the same thing in a widely quoted study in 2007. Only Sorrells et al. Have done that. As you see, the tip is the most sensitive portion, so even mild forms of circumcision remove it. It's not just the quality of sensation that it has lost, but
not just the quantity, but the quality, hence the comparison by some men circumcised in adulthood with going colorblind, blind in one eye, or deaf in one ear. But the only studies that get any publicity are those that show circumcision is beneficial and harmless. These harms and losses are inevitable. As well as its erogenous function in the male, the foreskin stimulates the partner, acting as a natural French tickler. The pain of circumcision doesn't end with the operation, but in a baby it continues whenever urine enters the wound until it is healed a week or two later. The risks. Death is, of course, rare, but the scandal is that we have no idea how rare. It's in everybody's interest not to blame circumcision when a death occurs. Instead, it's blamed on the secondary cause, the infection or hemorrhage or anaesthetic. A baby's body contains only about 350 millilitres of blood, and he can afford to lose only 10% before he needs a blood transfusion. One such case in South Dakota came to light last week, and the parents are suing. And the boy died in his mother's arms in a Golders Green synagogue in 2007, 30 minutes after he was circumcised, and the verdict was cop death. The Initiation Society had a QC on hand. The pathologist who had found a verdict of thought he had died of shock heart failure consequent on a circumcision, he was not called. The plastibel is a method of circumcision where a suture crushes the foreskin into a plastic ring, rather like the action of an elastrator. It's widely praised as being a no-knife method. A boy died in Ontario when his urethra was blocked by a plastibel ring, and no blame has attached to anybody. That's enough about death. Okay. Nowadays, MRSA is a particular risk to boys having an unnecessary operation in hospital soon after birth. And since circumcision is touted as making the penis maintenance-free, and prudery is one reason for doing it, much of the minor damage and the sexual damage only comes to light in adulthood, and even then it may not be sheeted home to the circumcision that caused it. It was the wild variety of reasons given for circumcising, often mutually contradictory, that got me interested in the psychology and sociology of the operation. This is the list of circumstitions. It should be longer. I made this roll some years back. There's now 392. You can find them on my website. Those are the classes of reasons. And then, taking just the medical ones, many of these ailments were thought to be consequences of masturbation, when that was associated with moral hygiene. Always circumcision is supposed to be good for the most feared disease of the day, and intactivists, that's us, campaigners against genital cutting, predicted AIDS would take its turn long before the claim was actually made. A variety of observational studies seem to suggest a country-by-country correlation between intactness and HIV infection. Others didn't, but they didn't get the publicity. In this chart, we have a man-by-man correlation, not just a country-by-country correlation. And in the seven countries marked in pink, Cameroon, Ghana, Lesotho, Malawi, Rwanda, Swaziland, and Tanzania, and in parts of Uganda, more of the circumcised men have HIV than the non-circumcised men. I think Swaziland has actually changed over, but, I mean, it was one year where they took this survey. This is the National Demographic and Health Surveys. So they performed three randomized clinical trials in South Africa, Kenya, and Uganda, where, as it happens, more of the non-circumcised men already have HIV. The gold standard is the double-blinded placebo-controlled trial. It would be difficult to conceal a man's circumcision status from him, but he could certainly be confused by a placebo operation. They do placebo operations on, they leave you with an incision. Yes. They put you out, you wake up, you've been cut in the stitches. Yes. It's done. The experimental groups, but not the control groups, were told to abstain from sex for 6 weeks or to use a condom if they couldn't abstain, but to use a condom every time anyway. It's a crazy mixed message, but it seems highly likely that a painful operation would have a reinforcing effect on the advice. All three of the trials were cut short for ethical reasons on the basis that circumcision worked so well it had to be offered to the control group. But they have continued to publish results from one of the trials even though the participants are no longer random. Here are the three trials. The intact control group on the left of each pair, the circumcised experimental group on the right, a total of 10,900 men. The green bars represent men who never got HIV. The red bars are men known to get HIV. The orange columns represent the 73 men who didn't get HIV but might have if they hadn't been circumcised. I don't know if you've been following this, but this has had stories worldwide, and it's big news in Africa, and these massive circumcision campaigns have started in a variety of countries. And, you know, the stories are starting to come out now that South Africa is slow on the uptake of circumcision. Yellow and orange bars together represent those lost from study, their HIV status unknown. They outnumber the men known to have contracted HIV by several times, and one strong motivation for dropping out would be to find you were HIV positive. You really wouldn't want to go back to the people who had given you this painful operation in the hope of protecting you, would you? And they were all encouraged to get tested externally. Another study, from a sub-study of this, measured the transmission to women. This was part of the Ugandan randomized control trial. As you see, for those who can't see the slide, 18% of the women were 18% of the women were infected by circumcised men, and 12% of the women were infected by intact men. The trial was cut short because they said it would be futile to continue, but the suspicion arises that they didn't want it to reach statistical significance in a direction unfavourable to circumcision. Instead, they said the higher HIV rate was because couples didn't wait for the wound to heal before they resumed sex, blaming the victim. Letting the study run would have put that to the test. There was no additional ethical issue because the men were all already HIV positive, and they had just established that circumcising the control group would offer no more protection to the women. That's the HIV.